All right, welcome back to the Ottawa studios of Inside My Canoe Head. I am Dr. D, your host. This week, we are going to talk about preparedness, public transit, and the notorious 15-minute city. So sit back, grab yourself a beverage. Let's get at it. Yeah, it's funny. I can sit there and listen to guitar all day. I talked about this before, but, you know, who doesn't love a great guitar riff? So thank you very much, all of your comments on the last episode on preparedness supplies, how to figure out how to get them. And it's just a different idea to get you from A to B. It's one that's tried, tested, and true, and based upon research. So thanks for your comments. We got more coming your way. Any questions on what we do and why we're here, drop over to insidemycanoehead.ca. All the links to our socials are there, our executive services, and everything else. And if you like what you hear today or any other day, drop over to Buy Me a Coffee. Buy Me a Coffee. I'm just fueled by wonderful, simple black coffee. So today we want to talk about preparedness and public transit. Unfortunately, another story of an individual stabbed to death in Toronto on the subway. So there's been lots of stories in the press to talk about this. So I think it's important when we bring in preparedness, because listen, the vast majority of us in today's modern world live in urban and suburban environments, and many of us have taken public transit before. For the first couple of years of my PhD back in the last decade there, I spent it all on public transit, an hour and 45 minutes each way. Bus, train, bus, sometimes bus, train, train, various different combinations of different types of light rail, etc., express buses, regular route buses, whatever you want to call them. And you get to see, you know, it's the manifestation of society all around you. Every element that you could imagine is standing there with you. Everybody else out there chasing their dreams, doing their thing, and getting around. And public transit is essential for a successful operation of a city. You simply can't build a modern city that is anywhere near efficient, let alone effective, without good quality public transit. And now that public transit is fueled here in the city of Ottawa, where I live, it's about a 50-50 split between those who pay to play, those who use it, and those of us who own homes who pay property taxes. And the reason for that is there is a positive externality, a benefit that I get from having a positive, well-running, and well-used public transit system in the city of Ottawa, even if I never touch it. And all you need to do is be around a major city when there's a transit strike. Just do that once, and you'll never again complain about public transit. Because when all of those people who can't use public transit either jump in Ubers, taxis, or cars to get around, the entire city comes to a grinding halt. And so that funding is very good. You can't literally make transit goers pay the full price here in the city of Ottawa. That would be about $7.50 each way. So that's just cost prohibitive for anybody, let alone somebody on a socioeconomically challenged in any way, shape, or form. They're key to reducing congestions and increasing mobility. In a big city or any major city whatsoever, mobility is key. Your ability to get around and get poop done, right? Just to get from A to B, whether it's work, play, going to see friends, sights, sounds, adventure, grocery store, doctor's appointment, dentist appointment. Mobility is key. Now, if everybody had a car and everybody wanted to drive themselves, nobody would get around. So not only does the transit system need to exist, but it needs to be efficient. It needs to be able to get you where you need to go in a reasonable amount of time. It needs to be accurate, and it needs to be of assistance. So the ease of use is directly related to an increased level of productivity from the people. Increased productivity can be, you know, expressed in increased output, which means increased dollars available for consumption. Consumption dollars that can be spent in local businesses and can be available through higher property tax values for the city to deliver critical services. So there is a correlation and a relationship between the amount of money available for cities critical social services to help those in need, and the quality of the public transit system. You have a poor public transit system, you're going to have a low bank account available for social problems and for dealing with those that need assistance. Ideally, and this is the idealistic portion behind the idea of a 15-minute city, is that transit should be absolutely able to replace the need for a car. Not the want, but the need for a car. The idea of a 15-minute city, I'm going to talk for a second about this because it's been bastardized as some nefarious, horrible idea that they're going to pin you into the corner and they're going to make you use a passcode to get out of your section. And if you drive beyond the boundaries, your electric car will be shut down. I mean, this is one of the cases where conspiracy does go off the rails, because the 15-minute city is a creation that each individual should be able to walk or bike or use public transit to get to everything they need in their normal lives from their residence within 15 minutes. So it's an idea of how we construct cities, right? We don't build massive swaths of suburban homes and then massive centers of all these conglomerated big box stores together that require individuals to have cars with these big, long, straight roads connecting everything. We build cities like we used to, the downtowns, a bunch of eclectic shops. You've got your drugstore, your doctor's office. You've got office towers. You've got high density and medium density housing. It's all built in together. So literally, I should be able to walk out of the front door of my house, meet all of my needs just by walking within 15 minutes. There's no nefarious plan to it. But those that want to defeat some real nefarious plans that are out there have hijacked a 15-minute city as some horrible idea that's out there, and it's not. It's actually wonderful. Imagine if everybody was fit, right? And I mean, I say this all the time. This is a bit of a tangent, but what the hell? I'll go there anyhow. Why do we need more hospital beds? Why shouldn't we be able to close hospital beds regularly? Not because we can't afford them, not because we don't have the nurses, but because the population has made the conscious decision to be healthy enough that they don't require them. That you're closing hospital beds because you don't have sick patients. Why? And one of the key things to doing this, and we talk about it at length at Inside My Canoe Head, is walking. Literally walking. If you walked where you needed to go on a day-to-day basis and didn't drive, your health would become exponentially better. Your likelihood of ending up in a hospital would be far lower. Your need to go to an emergency room would be far lower. And the demand on the healthcare would fall without any additional healthcare investment whatsoever. But that's the unpopular part. But here at Inside My Canoe Head, I love bringing up the unpopular part that's in the corner saying the quiet part out loud. Just get fit and then you won't have to worry about being as sick. So putting that aside, what does this mean for preparedness, right? Toronto and safety, Calgary, Edmonton, Ottawa, violence exists on the public transit system and in around public transit stations. It's a normative versus positive discussion. I know we don't want that to happen. I know we have a pretty good idea why it happens, but it's happening. So it's not about what you want the world to look like. It's about the reality right now. When you're going to get up tomorrow and go to the public transit system, you are entering a dangerous place, a place that has the potential to cause you harm. And a lot of people really have no choice but to use the public transit systems, right? Now, we can invest in the social problems that are a lot of the reasons and precipitate a lot of the violence that happens. Those with challenging issues, those that cannot find stable housing. There's a lot of socioeconomic problems that fuel the violent situation we have on public transit. We actually can put the money into that and solve that. But nobody, and we want to put more security forces down there, and we can. That's not a problem. We want better service, more on time, higher quality service. We can do all of that. The problem that every time we need to do that, nobody out there in the listening audience wants to pay the higher taxes to do it. Ask the user of the public transit system if they're willing to have a 10% raise in their personal income taxes to cover the cost of fighting the socio problems that lead to violence, and as well as improving service and improving security on the platforms. But it's going to cost 10%. They're like, no. That magical rich corporation or the rich people in society that I'm being bombarded and told that they never pay their fair share, go get them. Go make them pay for it. So it's part of that. We can have the things that we want in society, but it's going to cost you, and it's going to cost you big. And you need to be willing to open up your pocketbook. I don't care if your annual income is $30,000 a year and you live in Toronto. You're going to have to pay more taxes to fix these problems. But if you're in a reality of a dangerous situation, I'll revert to the long-handing talks that we do here on Inside Mike Newhead about your animalistic requirements, right? Your animalistic requirements are those that keep you alive and thriving in society. And one of them is security. And there are two elements that are critical to public transit. Number one is situational awareness. I don't want to get into a rationale of why people were attacked or whether there's responsibility on both sides. We don't want to get into a discussion of victim blaming, because then everybody loses their absolute top of their head, blows off when you try to state. But let's put it this way. When you enter a public transit station and you get on public transit, right? Situational awareness. Who is around you? Are you paying attention to the movements of all the human beings within violence range of you? So anybody within a couple of steps of you, are you watching them? Are you paying attention to what you're doing? Do you have your back to the wall to ensure that you cannot be grabbed or approached from behind? Are you standing up? And this is something I saw in Joe Rogan. The number one thing in jiu-jitsu and why it's so successful is you need to take the fight to the ground. Why do you need to take the fight to the ground? Because you need to get rid of the number one huge power of a human, which is explosive physical force, which comes from the legs. And you get rid of that. And then when you take it to the ground, if you can bypass the legs and take the individual's legs out of the fight, you've taken away their explosive physical power, right? So don't sit down. Stand up. Have room. Make sure that you know where your exit is if you have to exit. If you have to move on the platform, don't stand near the line. Stand back from the line. Have a back to the wall. Stand up. Have your hands free. Don't be holding something in your hand. Have a backpack. Have a bag. For Lord's sake, even if you have earbuds in, make sure it's bloody off or bloody low, right? It is your responsibility to be aware of the world around you and be aware of the activities of the people around you. And if your gut instinct is telling you that somebody is a bit out of wax and should not be sitting next to you, then it is your responsibility to place some space between you and them. Does this work in an absolutely crowded bus with 1,000 people of your closest friends, like 2 inches from you? Listen, I rode those buses where people were pushing each other to get in the door so the doors could close. Listen, I've been there. I understand this doesn't work in absolutely every situation. But as you become more situationally aware of the world around you, you get to make better choices. You don't stop using the public transit because you don't have a choice. You use it in a way that mitigates risk, that lowers the risk to you, right? That's the job of situational awareness and understanding the world around you, is that you mitigate risk, you lower risk, and you take responsibility for that risk management into your hands, right? Don't go way down the end of the platform away from anybody, because if somebody comes down there and cuts off your exit, where are you going to go? You going to jump on the tracks and go running? No, you're going to stand by other people who look just like safe. They're going to work. They're doing their thing. They're recognized. They're familiar to you. You've seen them. You've seen their behavior. You know that they're reasonably safe individual, and you congregate reasonably close to them. And you create a pack mentality. It works. Now, every once in a while, you're going to be, and I mean absolutely in a rare occurrence, you're going to be faced with the potential for physical violence where you feel threatened and you're going to have to make a decision. Your first decision all the time is always, always to extricate yourself from that situation. Learn to negotiate. Learn to stay calm, chat with people, deconflict the situation, decompress it, whatever you want to call it. Just bring people's moods down, move them along, say goodbye, keep going, whatever it may be. It doesn't matter whether the person is being a total arse, right? It's not your day to win the fight with them. It's not your job to prove how stupid and idiotic they are or they're acting, right? Not at all. It's your job to create an area of safety around you and maintain positive situational awareness. And so if you're confronted with somebody that causes you harm, it is your job to do what you can to remove yourself from that situation in a calm manner. Every once in a while, there may come upon a situation where somebody may offer physical violence to you or reach out to cause you physical violence. As a human being, you have a responsibility to yourself to at least understand the most basics of self-defense. I will not be your teacher. There are many places to go to learn that, many basic self-defense classes that are available on YouTube if you have no money, if you don't have time to take classes. But understand there is an exceptionally small likelihood that you may be faced with physical violence. And in that very, very short period of time that physical violence lasts, there likely is not going to be someone else there to jump in and protect you. So you need to understand how to do that and understand that the principal purpose of self-defense skills is to not get in and haul out Donnybrook and defeat the opponent, but it is to create sufficient amount of space through the opponent or beside the opponent to allow you to extricate, exit the situation, and move to a position of safety, right? That's it. That's what your job is to do. And that is exceptionally rare, but when it does happen, you have no choice but to know how to use the most basic of ideas to help yourself. And again, take the time to learn whatever is the best method to learn, whatever works for you, whatever you're most comfortable with, whatever you know, whatever you can find online and suits your age. If you're in a wheelchair, or if you're somebody using a walker, there are videos, there are courses, there are people who instruct self-defense for people on public transit who are somewhat challenged in their physical or their mental mobility. Those courses are all available out there, and a lot of those videos are available free of charge on YouTube. So there's not an economic barrier to learning self-defense. There's you as the barrier. And so, to summarize in your idea of using public transit and preparedness is, we need to champion for the value of public transit to society. We live in urban environments. I think it was actually last decade that Canadians topped over 85% of us live in designated urban areas. And it's only going to grow from there. We need our public transit. We need it to be a safe place. We need it to be healthy. We need it to be vibrant. We need it to be useful. We need it to be something that citizens look on with pride, not disgust. We want it to be something that we value in our society because there are so many positive externalities, both individually and collectively, economically and socially, that come from a vibrant and healthy public transit system. We need to invest in it. We need to invest in the service, invest in the people. And when we invest in it and it creates productivity, then what we get from that productivity is more tax money. And that more tax money that we get from direct productivity allows us to invest in social programs to help people in our society who need a hand, to help those who are socioeconomically challenged, favor them to get up on their own two feet and charge after their dreams. It's an amazing thing when it works really, really well, when it's kept clean and prideful. You can go to some European cities and some Asian cities and look at the quality and how clean and how well-developed and well-managed and well-run their public transit systems are, because it's culturally a moment of pride. It's a thing of pride within their culture, and they don't let it get dirty. They don't let it get disgusting. They don't allow violence to happen on it. People take care of their public transit, and that's part of the culture that has to change. But I am a huge fan of public transit. I had a great time on OC Transpo. Yeah, sure, the odd bus broke down or the train broke, whatever, right? Welcome back to Stoicism. You only allow anxiety if you want anxiety. So I can't control whether the bus breaks, so I don't allow that to cheese me off. You know what? I'm going to miss a meeting. Life goes on. Text my boss. Hey, bus broke. What do you want me to do, right? Bus breaks five times in a row. You're going to have to take a different figure out a different route to work, but these things happen. So hopefully today was valuable for you. Hopefully you just understood that the value of public transit and why it's important, but understand that you as an individual right now have to take on the reality as it is presented to you. We want it to be an absolutely safe and clean place to go and an enjoyable experience. It is currently not. So while the system is doing what it can to fix it, it is your responsibility to maintain positive situational awareness, reduce the risk of harm to yourself as much as you can manage, and then in the unlikely event, understand what you can and cannot do to be able to extricate yourself from a potentially violent situation, right? Charge through life. Love it. Don't, you know, sit in your house and never go anywhere because life is a dangerous, disruptive place. Remember, everything good and amazing in your life happens just on the other side of your comfort zone. And maybe public transit right now is that for you. So take the necessary measures, take the precautions, maintain situational awareness, know the world around you, be safe, and be with other people. Form little groups. It works. Take care, stay safe, and if you got any questions or any suggestions, drop over to insidemycanoehead.ca. Drop me an email at jeff@preparednesslabs.ca. Jump on our social media. And again, if you like the quality of this broadcast and what we have to say, drop over to Buy Me a Coffee and Buy Me a Coffee. And in the next 2 weeks, we are going to have our first book out. It's called Preparedness Simplified. It is the beginning guide. It's the summation of all of our ideas on how to adopt a prepared life. It's coming out on Kobo Readers. It'll be out in a couple of weeks, and I will announce it across our social media. Take care. Stay safe.